All right. At this time, it's my pleasure to announce our speaker, Sam Reed. Okay, Sam Reed. We're all good.
So I always slide in right into the wire. I'm Shannon. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, you guys. Oh, I got a bonus cell phone, too. $5 fundraiser. Oh. Oh, my gosh, you guys. It's been a long time since I've been at a speaker meeting. I got to say, my sponsor, when I first got sober, that was like horrible anxiety. And she said, you need to come to the Friday night Cody meeting and you need to speak every Friday until you're not scared to speak anymore. I said, are you? I hate sobriety so much. And I did it. I did what she told me and I was that desperate to stay sober. And I come to the, is that meeting still happening, that Friday night Cody meeting?
Yes.
Do you guys all come and stand up and talk in front of everybody? Right? I know. She said do it, and I did it because I was so desperate to never go back to where I was. I would have done anything, even speak in front of a bunch of people, until I was okay speaking in front of a bunch of people. So I will say that was my first introduction to being up here and talking. But what it was like and what happened and what it's like now, gosh. When I was drinking, I loved it, and I drank young, and I started really young. I just love all my women from Thursday night, right? So you guys,
right.
It's so great to see you. But also, I can't lie now, so there's that. I do pray right before I come to a meeting that Nancy and I talked about this as being right-sized. Ask God, you know, to help me be what I'm supposed to be. Not looking up at people from down here and not looking down at you from up here, but just eye level, just the right time. And that's, I think, the biggest gift of what AA has given me is remembering to be right-sized and then becoming right-sized by working these steps. I just love that. So when I was out drinking, I started young. I come from a long line of very, very confident alcoholics. They were the best drinkers who drink for days at a time. Still do, and there's 5 generations of us right now on the planet, and we're all extra good at this. This is our secret superpower. And there's a bunch of us now who are sober also. And I look at where I started in my drinking, and it was, I want to say 9 or 10, just sipping, you know, the leftover drinks from all the parties. And then a little bit later in life, 13, getting my own drinks and going, oh, this is it. And I, at 4 and 5 years old, I would stand around so afraid of people. I'd have these 2 fingers in my mouth, like this, and I wouldn't make eye contact to anyone. And my family would name me Eeyore because I just wouldn't talk to anybody. And alcohol taught me to talk to people. It taught me to interact. It taught me to just wag my tail. It taught me to do all kinds of things. Then I over-taught myself. But I have to say alcohol is the thing that helped me with that crippling anxiety and fear that I had as a child and that I had growing up later. But my drinking got really, really, and I'm sorry, I have to talk dual addiction because alcohol is my drug of choice, but I got to say that the combo with the drugs got me here way faster, way, way, way faster. Also could be why I got lost on the way here. That could be some residual damage. I'd be like, hey, isn't it this kind of slumber? But anyway, Laura, I'm going to follow you home. Thank you. But I have to say the drugs were my other choice when I didn't have access to alcohol. And I would use and drink with impunity. It didn't matter what I put in my body. It didn't even matter how much. It just mattered that I did. So you could hand me anything and I would take it. Even a handful. And I have to say I hit probably a pretty nasty bottom in high school. And dropped out of high school. Actually, I was homecoming queen and then dropped out from my drug and alcohol addiction 2 months later. This is how good we are at taking it, you guys. This is how, and I was also very small school, slim pickings. But I remember I ran into drug dealing. My parents didn't know what to do. They moved me out of the house in a little apartment because they just didn't know what to do with me. And I thought that was a brilliant plan. And so I lived and dealt drugs, and at that time it was after the Quaaludes. I'll take top down. You guys are all pretty young. I don't know what you But I remember that was how I made my money, and a cocktail waitress. And then they didn't care about how old you were in the town again that I was from. And so so I hit my bottom there, I would say. It was really bad. I was living with my boyfriend. I was in jail with my second drunk driving, and he was coming to get me. He crashed his car, and he died. And my brother came to get me, and I was 18 years old. He came to get me, and he lived here in San Maria, in King City, and he goes, I gotta leave you with me, and, you know, God love his codependent soul. He saved my life. He goes, I gotta come bring you to live with me in San Maria. And so he did. He brought me here and did not sober me up. I was still raging drunk. But I lived here with him until I think I was like 19, and then I met my fresh new codependent. And and I remember when I met him, I thought, oh, good, good. He didn't know my history. He didn't know anything about me. He didn't drink like I did. I could lie with impunity. He wouldn't know just how bad I was. He wouldn't know because nobody was there to tell him. So so I was like, that one for a while. And I really liked this one. And so so I drank and did all my horrible stuff that I do in this relationship, and got another drunk driving, spent some time in jail, and still didn't have, that wasn't my bottom either. I was like, meh. I would have preferred to do weekends, but they didn't let me do that then with straight time. And it just didn't matter. I made some new friends. I did. I remember being in there going, nah, this isn't so bad, you know, and I had a gal that took good care of me, and I was delighted. And I have to say, my bottom really was when I got out of jail and the guy I was living with said, I can't live like this anymore. I can't live like this anymore. I'm like, well, what's not to love? I mean, trust me, this is a person, I don't know if you guys remember, but Sunway Inn used to have a thing called the basement, not Sunway Inn, the one across it, but used to have a thing called the basement underneath, now the Chinese. Remember that place? It was a bar, right? I'd come out of there with barf in my hair, my pants, and my people that I was with. Remember El Camino's? I don't know if people drive those anymore, but they'd make me ride in the back of El Camino to take me home. I couldn't ride in the front. I was disgusting. And I thought I was having fun because I didn't know any better. And so this guy said, nah, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. You gotta do something. So I went at the time to sign up for this thing called Shingle, which is where they make you bark until you don't want to drink anymore. There's a reason many of you have not heard of it. It doesn't work. So I didn't sign up for it. I said it would. And I was at my work one day. This is my, I guess, spiritual moment of why I'm in AA. I was at work one day, and I had to go to counseling at the end of town to go for the drunk driving and spend $10,000 to lie to them, too. And I was on that anabuse stuff, so I wouldn't drink, but I drank on that too. You know, there's just, I'm so happy to have some brain cells left. But I was at work, and I had just gotten done lying to my counselor the day before about how great I was doing with sobriety when I had just gotten drink right after. And this counselor comes to my work. I'm like, oh, you can't come here. Everybody's going to know. Like, they didn't know anyway. But I didn't. And so he goes, I literally don't know why I'm here. And I did. I said, I do. And for the first time in my life, I told the truth. I said, I think you're here because I've been lying to you, and I drink all the time. My anabuse isn't working, and I don't know what to do. And he said, I do. My wife works at my hospital in the detox unit. And let's get you there. And I went. I went. I didn't say I'd go and not go. I didn't. I mean, I did put it off a couple days. It wasn't Friday. But Monday, I did go. And so I went and I got sober in one of those 30-day programs. And I never would have thought that was I would do that. I certainly had no intention of being in AA meetings ever and ever. And I'll be damned if I was going to do these freaky cult God steps. Absolutely. And so I went there and I thought, I'll just fake it till I make it, just like I always have. I'll just go in there. But somehow in that hospital, in the basement, when we would smoke like chimneys, because back then you could get away with it, something started to click. And even though I was lying and saying, yeah, I'll do it, yeah, I'll do steps, what was happening was I saw other people like you there getting sober. And they bring in those in-hospital meetings. And I saw those people sober, and I thought, they're sober, and they seem happy. And that was laughing. And I remember that this one guy, this really helped me a lot, too, because you don't have to believe in God to stay sober here. I'm so happy that wasn't a criteria, because I was so anti that. And his name was Hank. He was a huge, giant Native American guy. And he came in and he says, I'm Hank and I'm a dope addict alcoholic and I don't believe in God and I've been sober for 9 years. And I thought, Hank, I freaking love you, Hank. And he would come to every meeting and he would say the same thing every time. And every time he said it, it cut a little bit, carved a little bit more out of my chest of my resistance to the, you know, not to God. I was so relieved I didn't have to believe in God. And I could use a table. I didn't really understand all that, but the minute, I mean, my plan was, because my plans were so well for me on my own, was to do all the steps I could do that didn't have the word God in them. I had this super cool plan. I'm just going to skip that one, that one, that one, and I'll just do all the rest of them. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. And I'm really glad that they're sponsors. My sponsor's like, you might want to give duties in order. You might want to start with the first one. And she really, really walked me through these steps. On step one, with the powerless over alcohol, that was an easy one to admit. My life was in shambles. But when I get a little bit of sobriety in me, I forget about how bad it was. 100, you know, and all the time I'm romanticizing it. I know for romanticizing it, I wear my cancer bark in my hair. I just want a cocktail. Well, I've never had a cocktail in my life. I didn't even call it cocktails. I called it bottle for candles. So I don't know that people who go out and have a drink after work, that just wasn't the way I ever drank. Not one single time. But that my life was unmanageable was a bit more for me to swallow. Because I had a job. Sure, I had to do a few other, use my vacation time for jail. Now I was in a 30-day program, but I was employable. So that's how it was hard for me to realize that I was unmanageable. And then when I came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore the sanity, I didn't know I was crazy until years into this program. Years. And I was then looking back, I'm like, I was so disciple. No wonder people would look at me like that. And you know the look. Don't act like you don't. But we've all been on the receiving end of that look. And I remember thinking, I was crazy. And I'm getting so much better now, a few years later. That native decision, our will and our life, over the care of God, couldn't handle it. We would not handle that debt over to God. Absolutely not. But that big underlined as we end decision, again, that, the way these steps are laid out for me, let me stay here. I never would have stayed if you said I have to get God. Never in a million. I mean, sick to even say the word God. I hated it. And so I love that. I hope this isn't funny, but God got me, so I'm good. But I just want to say, that it doesn't matter how you come in here. My sponsor used to tell me, she said, it doesn't matter what happens as long as you don't drink or use in between meetings. You can get through anything. Anything. Come to find out. She's right. So I love that I didn't have to, over the care of you. Basically, you became my higher power. These ones. My AA buddies, everybody became my higher power. I couldn't do God, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter. The inventory stalled. Didn't want to do it. Procrastinated. Also because I'm so deep in a whole lot of life. My phone's just wanted to call me later. She said, we're doing it Saturday. Be ready. I'm like, I want you to come over. And so she came over. We did it for hours and hours. We burnt it in the sink. Also, curtains on fire, so don't hear that in the house. I use a lot of paper. But I am going to say that was a really thorough inventory, and I worked really hard on it, and she knew me, and I love it. She's one of the few people I ever told the truth to, and telling the truth now is so much easier, but back then I thought I had to lie about everything. Everything about who I was, even stupid lies, random lies. You know, why can't you come over? I have a date. No, I don't. I've been out in 3 months. So I would lie about weird stuff that didn't need to be lied about instead of just, no, thanks. That's enough. And so I love not lying. I really love not lying. And then telling somebody else about all the stuff I did wrong, that misstep, that everybody, I read it even in the big book, it says, oh, I'm so free. I felt like crap after that trip. I was not one of those people that had that freedom. I felt exposed. I felt awful. I'd come to this meeting and I'd sit over there where you are, and she'd be over there, and I'd be like, my own sponsor, who has, knows you. And I'd like avoid her. I'd see her coming, I'd like sneak out that door. I didn't want to see her anymore after telling her all my ugly stuff. And finally she cornered me, she's pretty quick. And she saw my little duck knees. And so a few weeks later she finally just said, listen. She goes, it's okay. She goes, all my nerve endings were on my outsides, and I felt like everybody could see me, and it wasn't okay. And it wasn't okay. And so she walked me through that, and I'm glad she did. And I, when I read the big book, I was like, it's going to be so nice. And some parts weren't the same as the big book for me, except for I got to be sober. So, and having my higher power remove all these defective character, still doing that on the daily. But in those things, it's not I had to remove them. And it's not like I didn't know what to ask for, because I'll tell you, my character defects that I needed removed were right in my face. Just like the amends later on. When it was time, it was really super duper evident exactly what needed to be looked at. And so I love that this program works like that, because I kept thinking, I've got to ask it. See, guys, don't ask for patience, by the way. Just wait. It'll come. But I remember every time I prayed for patience or tolerance, I would get the biggest asshole in my life that I had to work through. Be like, oh. So I learned to just pause and pray and just, okay, when the time comes, I'll be ready for it. And the amends are tough, too. It took me a long time to make a lot of these amends. I remember I have an AA meeting in my house. It's been in my house for 34 years, Thursday nights for women. And for 22 of those years, I had a picture that I stole over my mantle. I'm in sobriety. For 22 years, that picture, I'm like, I should probably not have a stolen picture of my house that I never made an amends on. Just things like that that just took forever. Finally, I took that picture back to Selena's mom where I stole it. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm just, we've redecorated 30 times and this picture was stolen off the wall. I go, I just have to. It's part of my program. They're like, just go donate some money to the Lighthouse, which is a sober place. I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. So they didn't arrest me. They certainly didn't want the picture back. But it's just random things like that, that when it's time, it's time. And sometimes it's just longer. It just is. The making direct amends, that was a tricky one, I gotta say. So the guy that I was living with at the time ended up being my husband, and we've been married almost 40 years, and that's all because of AA. But I will tell you that in early sobriety, I wanted to kick him to the curb and get a fresh new one, because I didn't want somebody who knew all my bullshit and had been through all that crap with me, and I had to work through it. My sponsor says, you stay put for 1 year. She goes, you don't get to run, you have to stay. She goes, you have to stay, and you have to work through your pain, and you have to work through his pain. You don't get to hit and run with your amends by. And I had a plan, but it didn't work out. So that was a tricky one, and then it ended up being the best gift ever. As usual, it's a program, who knew? The other one was that I embezzled massive amounts of money from my employer, because I happened upon cocaine, and it's so expensive. And so I had to make that amends, and I thought, I don't know, my sponsor, she goes, you have to be willing to go to jail. You have to be willing to go to jail. And these amends, I'm like, what? Can I go to jail? And she said, yeah. She goes, just be willing to be willing. And I was like, I do not want to be drunk. This is how desperate I was not to be drunk again. like, all right, I'm going to go with that. All right. So I make amends to my boss, and I say, I literally know it's thousands. I don't know how much, but it was over a period of 2 years, and I've been, you know, stealing, like, basically daily. and he's like, all right, well, let's come up with an amount, and you can pay it back. And I thought, and I can still work here. I guess I'm going to go now. And so I did. We figured out seven now, and I paid it back every week. I mean, I would love to have secretly paid it back and never made that amends, but my sponsor also said no to that plan. He said, no, you got to pay it straight up. And you know what ended up happening? He put me in charge with the treasurer of all the money there and trusted me so much because I was trustworthy. These steps and this program made me trustworthy. Are you kidding? So almost to the day that I paid that back, I left that job because I was pregnant with my first kid. Oh, and I got married in there, too. Not that that matters these days, but I did. And I didn't want to get married either. I was scared. I messed it all up, and I just had a propensity for that. And I married him. And we'd been together 7 years before I married him, and through a lot of icky stuff. And I got sober when I was 24, and married him, I think, when I was 27 or 28. And got a baby when I was 30. Got another one when I was 31. And they're cool. They're cool people. So I'm going to say, speaking of babies, I'm going to jump ahead now 30 years because really, I won't be up for my whole life. You'll be so tired. But I have these two daughters, and I have no idea how to parent. None. And I come to these meetings. I don't know if you guys remember KBM. But she tucked me under her wing, and she lived right across from the house that I was in at the time. I walked to her house every day, and I'd smoke in her own smoking house with her big ashtray that said no smoking frog in it, and I'd smoke on the chimney. And she kept me sober, literally kept me sober, because I had to go to her house every day. I was just so shaky and so scared. And I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to have a barbecue. I didn't know how to have sex. I didn't know how to have a conversation. I certainly didn't know how to do this. And she just would walk me through it all. She said, oh, you know, here's the start of the day. Let's say a prayer. Oh, yeah, that. I couldn't remember to do any of these things on my own, which I still think that's why we're here today. So we have to be reminded on how to do it. You guys think. So I would go to her every day, and she kept me sober. Then I had these two kids 18 months apart. And I thought I was going to lose my shit. It was so hard. And I would come to this meeting, and I'd be sitting in that corner back there with these two kids that were like psycho. And I just wanted to cry in the corner because I'm like, really need this meeting. I can't hear anything. She would get both kids, stuff them under her armpits, go outside, and just play with them out there and talk to them. And I would, it didn't even matter, about 15 minutes or 10 minutes or 30 minutes, but those minutes were so needed and so necessary. I was so grateful for that in my early sobriety. And so then those little kids grew up. And as they were growing up, I realized I never finished my high school diploma. I never did any education. I dropped out and started my drug dealing in my special side plan for survival, and I never went back, and I thought, I can't have this kid, and not even have finished high school myself. So I got this job. It's a good job, and I decide I'm going to go to Delta. I'm freaking 30 years old, 32, but I thought, I don't want to take that, what is that, test you can take? Yeah, I didn't want to take that. I thought, I'm going to go to school. Let's go to school. So I'm this old lady in school, and I just want to finish school, like school. I don't know why I had to do it like that, but I did. I sat in that little classroom, and I finished it, and I just wanted to see if I could do the work. I just think I wanted to go ahead of brain, and I think I also needed it for my ego. So I went there, and I thought, well, I could do that. I think I'm going to go to college. So I go to college, and I could do that, and I got a four-year degree. And I lost all my friends at that time only because I could only go to AA. But two kids in junior high, me in college, and a husband who picked up all the slack. And so I got my degree, and then I got this great job, and I was like, what? I feel like every single thing that's happened in sobriety happened because I put my head down, closed, and did the steps And then all these other things happen because of this stuff, and because of sobriety. So fast forward a little bit to, 6-7 years ago, my youngest daughter is about 24, and her former college roommate calls us up and says, "Your daughter blackout drinks every day. Every day we're scared she's going to die. You need to do something." And she doesn't live in town, so we figure out it was so scary. So I go to my AA gals and go, "Oh my God, I may as well have never been in AA in my whole life." It took me square back to step one of, I'm so powerless over my daughter, I have no idea what to do. None. I was so scared that she would die. And I know all the things in AA, you can't save somebody else, and you can't make anybody else get sober, and you can't do any of those things. And I thought, but I can try. I can try. And if it doesn't work, at least I can try. So I went to my friends, and they walked me through it and held my hand. And I had another one who'd just come out of a rehab, and we staged an intervention, and we did one. And it was really scary and really hard. And it was my worst nightmare that one of my kids would come out stressed like me. Just like me. And I'm not that bad now. But you know, you guys know, I'm sure a few of you have kids, right? And so we do this intervention, and she takes it, and she bites the red herring. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's gonna go. So the counselor, the interventionist takes her to the hospital right then, have her backpack, I don't know, you've seen her on TV, but it really happens, and locks her up, detox for a week, and then 30 days in a program, and she's still sober. That was 6 freaking years ago. Is that not a miracle? So I just think that, I think that's amazing. She said it's okay to share that too. I've asked her for me. She's like, ah, sure, whatever you want. But I feel super grateful that not only did these gals in my Thursday night be sober, they kept my daughter sober. And sitting in an AA meeting with your kid is literally one of the biggest honors I've ever gotten to experience. I never, ever would have wished for that or dreamed of it, and now I can't imagine it any other way. So I gotta say, I don't know, again, back to my sponsor's telling me, she goes, "There's just no wrong way. She goes, just try not to drink for years in between. And if you do, come back anyway." I remember when I was early on, I go to that Lions Den meeting in Orchid, and I was drinking before I went, and I always drink vodka because you can't drink vodka, right? Everybody just, yeah, so everybody knew, but I didn't know they knew because I had this great, you know, self-denial, and so I would go to that meeting after doing a few shots of vodka, and people would just swarm around me because I was so popular, and come to find out they were trying to save my life, but at the time I just thought it was popular, and so, you know how we want. And so I was so grateful because nobody said, "You're drunk." They just said, "Keep coming back." Mm-hmm. Nobody said, "We know you're drunk. We're going to out you." Nobody did that. And I'm so glad they didn't, because I would have been like, "Oh my God, I can't ever come back here." And because they didn't, I did keep going back. And I kept going back drinking. But after a while, I wasn't drinking anymore. I didn't have to. And so I just love the way that you guys do this, because the non-judgment, then you don't have to get God. I don't have to walk in this room sober. I can come into this room drunk and get help. So I love that it's not like, you know, the gym. People, I have to lose 50 pounds before I can go to the gym. No, you don't have to be sober to come here. You don't have to lose 50 pounds before you go to the gym. Do it. Just go. Do it. Take care of yourself. And I'm going to say that last year, I know COVID, everybody's going through their stuff, don't worry, I'm not going to belabor our lives with that, but I am going to say last year was extraordinarily rough. In June, my nephew, he's 44, and he decided that he was raging alcoholic, and he decided he couldn't live anymore. So he bought himself 50 handles of vodka, locked himself in his room, wrote a note saying, "Don't call 911. I'm done." And he spent 3 days and drank himself to death. And I thought, that is literally the most hideous, horrible death I could imagine for anyone. And his notes said stuff like, I can't even tell if I have a soul. All those things that we thought when we're out there going, what is wrong with me? Why do I have this huge gaping hole where everyone else has a heart or a soul or something, anything? And for him to go like that, first of all, I was in big denial about it, even with the note, even with him doing that, even with all of that information. And I need to share that because I wanted to keep that fact that he committed suicide via alcoholism deliberately and intentionally because he had no hope left. And AA gave me tons of hope. Not to have hopeless moments while in AA, don't get me wrong, but I've never been without hope or hope that somebody else could give me. It's, I can live vicariously in your hope when I run out of juice. So I love that also, the gift of Jesus. In December, so that's a not on time death directly from this disease. In December, my mom, right before Christmas, passed away on time death. She was 85. And you know what, you guys? There's times when it's time to go, and there's times when it's not. And even though that leaves a gap, she was so ready. She's like, I am beyond ready. And there's a big difference. She was all faith-based and ready for it and cranky as hell for the end and also hilarious. She was hilarious. She would come to us and say, I'd be visiting, you know, the mom thing. Plus, I'm not very good at that. And we didn't get very close, my mom and I. And so I had a lot of duty in there versus true compassion. But the process of her dying the last couple of years engendered, at least the compassion, because I wanted to work through it. And I got to say, the number one, I know there's a lot of number one gifts. They're all number one. The forgiveness of this in this program, not just forgiveness of her, forgiveness of myself. You guys, if we're not doing it on that step 9, we missed that whole boat. Number 8 should be our name at the top of it. If I can't let this crap go, I can't let the stuff that I have between them go. So anyway, I just feel super grateful, and I don't know that I have anything else. I know that I'm very grateful to speak to Spanish early. Who's with me? But I really am grateful and touched to be asked to speak here, and it was an honor. And Al, it's so nice to meet you. I love your wife. I know, right? We already have 7 common besides alcoholism. So you guys, thank you so much for letting me be here today.